This is Radio Influence, podcasting redefined.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track. And yes, we're your weekly source for performance information. If you want to get in touch with us, our website is crushperformance.com. Write to us with any questions, comments, or smart remarks. Or if you have an idea or a question that you'd like to pose to us, you'd like us to investigate, let us know. We may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to the show. We've done that this summer, as a matter of fact. So we appreciate every note that we get and every idea as well. Sometimes you guys get us thinking, and that's our prime directive, is just to get everybody thinking, including ourselves. So do get to us. info@crushperformance.com is the email. And again, if we do like that idea, we may dedicate a segment or a episode to your idea. We answer every single message that we get. So please do write to us. We love it. No doubt about it. On Twitter, it's at Jeff Crush. On Facebook, Instagram, and check out our YouTube channel. We're having some fun with that. You can just search Crush Performance. The podcast, you can get it. We're on almost every available platform, iTunes to Apple Play to Stitcher, you name it, we're on it. You can get that at the website as well. And sign up for our newsletter. Our members are so important to us, I can't tell you. And our membership is growing. Thanks to everybody out there for signing up as we just try to spread the good word. And today's show is no different. We're winding up the summer here, heading into fall, and today's a big show. I want to go back and look at our summer. We had some great conversations and some really, really good interviews and some good feedback from the listeners as well. So I want to thank you again for that. But I want to go revisit a couple of episodes that we had because it stirred up some serious conversation in the professional world. Some of my colleagues in professional sport came at me hard. Some of them came at me with good questions, and some of them just wanted to know more. And we had that kind of feedback from every single level of sport, right from the grassroots up to the national programs to colleges. And I think the two biggest episodes of the summer were our episodes on ice and why ice might not be the best option for managing or treating injuries and return to play programs. Very important conversation that we had with Gary Reinl, former athletic trainer and author of the book called The Meltdown, Iced, The Illusionary Treatment. It was a powerful conversation. Gary sort of laid out his background and how he turned out to be the anti-ice guy and how he went on to look for solutions and shared with us some of the things that now a lot of athletes are using in every single sport. So I want to get back to that conversation. And a few weeks later, we backed that up a little bit because there was so much feedback with a conversation with Brandon Aiken, who is from the University of South Carolina, Aiken. He is the assistant athletic director there. And they might be the first collegiate program to have an ice-free training room. They do not use ice. And, of course, they've sort of touched base with Gary Reinl and got a hold of all the information when it comes to icing. And they've decided that it's not for them or their athletes. And we wanted to find out why. Ice has been such an ingrained part of sport performance, injury management, and just simple recovery processes for so long. But it's not the case. We're evolving. We're always evolving, and we're trying to learn. And we can't be afraid to question what we're doing in the light of new information. And we certainly cannot be are apprehensive to progress when the information points in a different direction. And I think that's what's happening. We've seen it with things like, let's talk about static stretching. We know that static stretching really isn't conducive to sport performance. We no longer do it, at least in our programs. You will never see one of our athletes do static stretching prior to performance. Static stretching would be, sitting down, holding a stretch for 30 to 60 seconds or whatever it may be. We just don't do it anymore. We establish range of motion through our programs around a joint, and we maintain that range of motion. And to get our athletes ready for sport, we're not sitting down and stretching and fatiguing the nervous system and breaking down muscle tissue. We're getting the body active, dynamically ready for sport. That is one of the biggest shifts I think we've seen in a long time. Could ice be another one? Was a big question. And there was some interesting feedback both ways on that episode. We're going to go back and look at that one. And then more recently, again, you all know if you listen to the show that our number one priority for performance in sport is rest and recovery, and inside of that, sleep. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It could be sport. It could be business, it could be academics, it could be music. Anywhere there's human beings trying to perform, sleep is impacting your performance. And it's one of the top priorities if you want to maximize your performance outcomes. So it's such an important conversation that we revisit it quite often here in the show, and rightfully so, because we're still not getting it right for the most part. We're seeing some great shifts. We're going to have another big show coming up as the NBA season approaches, because the NBA, I think, might be one of the more progressive leagues in terms of professional sport for understanding the impact of recovery and sleep to the point where they've adjusted their schedule. And a lot of that has to do with researchers from Stanford and our good friend Sherry Ma, who will be joining us later this fall to talk about, you know, exactly what's going on in the NBA and how powerful sleep is in human performance. But more recently, we talked with Dr. Charles Samuels from the Center for Sleep and Human Performance. He's the medical director there. And the one thing I like about Dr. Samuels is he's just science-based. Look, he's passionate. He decided to go into sleep science for some very personal and powerful reasons. I think that's a conversation unto itself. And again, in that show, he explains why he went that direction out of medical school. And we're so glad that he did, because he's one of the leaders when it comes to helping us understand the true impacts the true impact of sleep and the factors of sleep in human performance. And this conversation we had was really cool for a number of reasons. One, he really did outline why he went into sleep, and it's terrifying, and it's a good reason for everybody here to listen to that episode. You can go back onto the website and get it. But more importantly, he talked about his strong stance on technology. And when we are talking, we are referring to our national team Olympic level athletes and the pro athletes that he works with. In the programs that he has designed, he has a staunch hard line when it comes to technology and human performance. And frankly, it's not good. It's a huge uphill battle because it's so hard for young athletes and kids today to give up their technology. But if you're really, truly going to harness those important years, the teen years, we've got to push that direction. So we're going to go back and we're going to listen to that. Just very quickly, some of the comments that he made and why he made them, just to refresh everything and to set us up for our fall performance series. We've got a great lineup of shows coming up. And also later in the show, I want to get to some hot topics that have come across the wire here recently. A statement from Thomas Bach, who's the president of the IOC, caught my attention here a few weeks ago. And in a recent interview, he said, and it's a quote, "Doping is a war we cannot win," which is a surprise to me. And I understand where he's coming from. If you go back to the interview, you have to listen to it in its entirety. We'll be putting up the links on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and everywhere else, because it's a great conversation from the leader of the International Olympic Committee. But I was really taken back by his comments on doping. They're really empowering WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, to do their job and to be the governing police, the governing body when it comes to doping. They're taking a step back. But it was interesting to hear the president of the IOC saying, look, doping is a battle we just can't win. And I have some comments there, and I want to get into that, because I think we've made some really, really big progress, especially in light of the FIFA and IOC banning of the Russian Athletic Federation in previous Olympics and some of the world championships leading up to the last Olympics. I think it sent a real strong message across the bow. Can we wipe out doping? Listen. And we're going to get to this later, but that's a deep topic. And there's many sides to this conversation, but I want to get into that. We'll discuss the Olympic agenda for 2020. The IOC has a strategic roadmap for the future. And one of the big things they're considering now is esport. So a couple questions come up here. Is esport a sport? And is esport worthy of the Olympics? Well, it's going to be a medal event in the upcoming Asian Games in 2022. So is that something that's going to spur the IOC to consider or consider esport for the Olympics? Possibly so. I mean, look, it's a big, big industry. It's a $1 billion industry, and there's over 250,000 people competing in esport. It's massive. And one of the things that Thomas Bach is talking about is, you know, making the Olympics young and hip. Could this be a strategic move? Well, we're going to get your opinion on that over the next couple weeks, but we're going to talk about that later. And when it comes to doping, a great new development on the war against drugs from Major League Baseball, who, again, maybe outside of the International Olympic Committee or International Cycling Committee, Major League Baseball, I think, is the most progressive professional sport when it comes to anti-doping policies and programs. And they just made a great move. Coming out of the commissioner's office this last week, MLB agrees to a groundbreaking partnership with the player trainers in Latin America, the guys who go out and sign these young kids and train them so they can hopefully one day become professional. We've all heard the horror stories, and you can Google this, about some of the conditions and some of the things that go on down there in terms of player development. We're talking animal steroids and just some crazy stuff that's been reported over the years. Well, Major League Baseball just made a groundbreaking deal. And we're going to talk about this because that could change the landscape for a lot of international sport. But I love this move. Absolutely love it. And we're going to talk about that. And then, of course, I've been putting out there through all of our platforms, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and we've got some great results and great responses. I've been putting out the question to every coach out there. Look, we're putting together a two-part series on coaching and coaching development for this fall. It's going to happen sometime late September or October. And I've been asking coaches at every single level of sport this question. What are the top five things you would like to learn to help you be a better coach for your players? And it's been fun, for starters. We've gotten a lot of responses from people I know, but people I don't know, from around the world, from professional sport all the way down to moms and dads who are coaching their 4, 5, 6-year-olds. It's been a ton of fun. And I'd like you to send me your list. If you coach any level of sport, any sport for that matter, send in your list, info@crushperformance.com. You can put it on Twitter. You can contact us. A lot of it has come through Facebook, believe it or not, Crush Performance. So you can get us there as well. But I'd like to know, as a coach, what are the five things right now that you would like to learn to help you be a better coach? And we're going to get with some of the world's top coaching development people to talk about some of the questions you have. And the lists are great. Here's a couple of them that we've got. And this one comes from AJ in Belgium. When is a good time to introduce goal setting for kids? And another one from that list, number 4, what are the top 3 things a coach can do to impact development? I believe developing the environment physically and emotionally is crucial, for example. And those two things are fantastic. And again, I don't know what sport AJ's coaching there or what level he's at, but great questions. Here's another one from Janet. This is number 2 on her list. A little more information on how to assess an injury. What areas do I refrain from moving her from the field? And what could I be looking for? Now, that's a big one. And let me tell you right now, that one is really, really important for volunteer coaches. There's liability issues there, and there's some dangerous things that go on. Look, I coach my daughter's U13 soccer team, and we've had some really, really scary impacts out there. When most recently, we had one where there was a collision with the goaltender. The goaltender was coming out, the opponent was coming in, and it was a full-on football-like direct hit. It was scary. Listen, we immobilized the goaltender. The position player was okay. She got up eventually and worked her way off the field. But our goaltender, we stabilized, kept stationary until the ambulance got there. She went off to the hospital. She's bumped and bruised. I think maybe a cracked rib or something. I can't remember exactly how that one went down. But it was scary. And this is U13, U14 girls. So a lot of things happen out there. That is a very, very important question. And we will address that one, Janet. Just so you know, I think a lot of coaches need to be thinking about that. And number 5 from Janet. I would love to be given advice on coaching your own child. Wouldn't we all? Here's a good one right now. Don't. I'm joking, of course. No, but there are strategies for coaching your own child, and mainly away from the field. I think that's where you really have to be careful. I catch myself sometimes trying to coach all day long at supper, and there's no escape for the young athlete. So another just a great question. Hey, this one from Tracy, and these are little duffers from the sound of this list, but How do I plan practices when I'm busy and don't have time to prepare working 8 to 10 hours a day? Great question. There are resources out there. And number five from Tracy's list, how do I teach them to enjoy sport? Well, that is something you try to create in your culture. Here's one from James. How do I get players to be fully engaged? Another great, great conversation to have, and we're going to have that one. This one comes from Mike. How to instill and build confidence in a player. That was number one on Mike's list, and this one from Trevor. Number four, and this is a doozy. Anybody who's ever coached is going to appreciate Trevor's number four. Five tips or tricks on organizing and balancing your time as a volunteer coach. Okay, well, that's similar. But number four was a doozy, and I highlighted this one because this is definitely one we're going to address in our special, and we're going to talk a bit about it in the next few weeks. But number four, how to deal with parents. And that is a big one. There's no doubt. Hey, listen, in sport at any level, there's politics. When you get to pros, the parents might be replaced by agents and spouses, you know, for sure. But if you're a volunteer coach at any level of sport, parents are a very, very important part of the system. They can also be very, very challenging to work with. So I think for there, what we'll talk about, and I've got a funny feeling this is where that conversation will go, is getting it right from the start, setting the ground rules and not wavering. Protocols for contact, protocols for conversations, what the parents can and cannot do, and repercussions for breaking the rules. All great stuff. Listen, if you have a list or if you want to just throw a few questions out, I would really like to get them. I mean, I have mine from two parts of my life, coaching my young daughter and from my professional life, working with professional athletes and global development for Major League Baseball. Listen, as a strength and conditioning talent development guy, there are things I want to know. Some of it might sound really advanced because of the questions I'm asking, but it's at the end of the day, fundamentals of development, creating these great environments for young athletes to achieve and strive. And that's really what it's all about. And listen, if we're not supporting our coaches, we're in big trouble. So I'm really looking forward to those episodes coming up later this fall. Please get us your list. Again, info@crushperformance.com is the email. That's Crush with a K. You can also on Twitter at Jeff Crush, Facebook, Instagram. Not Instagram, I guess, but Facebook for sure. We've actually gotten some lists from there. So I'd like to know, what are your five top things that you would like to learn right now to help you be a better coach? I don't care if you're working in the NFL right now. I'd actually love to hear from you. And we have some lists from professional coaches as well. So get those to us. Looking forward to that one. Hey, we have to cut out for a quick break. And when we come back, I want to get into the hot topics, the IOC, eSport. We got to talk about their road plan. I want to talk about Major League Baseball's move and their agreement with the trainers in South America. I also want to talk about some of the questions and comments we're getting on our war on sugar. The Crush war on sugar will continue with a vengeance this fall. So stay tuned for that, everybody. We're going to be right back. More Crush Performance right after this. Crush Performance is brought to you by Mack Weldon, the best new menswear to buy right now. Get 20% off your first order. Visit MackWeldon.com and enter the promo code CRUSH at checkout. That's CRUSH with a K. Gentlemen, Mack Weldon is better than whatever it is you're wearing right now. Here's their guarantee. If you don't like your first pair, you can keep it and they'll still refund you, no questions asked. This is a great company with a great story. They started from scratch and engineered their own fabric. They made sure the design process was meticulous so you can count on the fit being the same each time. They built a world-class customer experience. The difference is in the details. So they obsessed over every stitch and seam until they reached their definition of perfect. It's performance clothing you can wear for working out, going to work, out on dates, or just everyday life. Our mission is simple: to make sure your basics and beyond are smartly designed and shopping for them is easy and convenient. Again, go to MackWeldon.com and enter the promo code CRUSH with a K at checkout. Save 20% on your first order and get yourself into the best new menswear on the market. Mack Weldon.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at CrushPerformance.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Jeff Crochelle here. Listen, if you do have any questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks, get to us. We love them all. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Info@CrushPerformance is the website. On Twitter, @JeffCrush. On Facebook, Instagram, and check out our YouTube channel. We're having a lot of fun there. Got some videos, some great links, and hooking you up with the world of performance. Just search Crush Performance. and join the Crush family. Become a member, sign up for our newsletter, subscribe to our podcast, and we'll just keep you on the cutting edge of the world of human performance, no matter what you do. Our background, of course, is sport and sport performance, and there's just so much to be learned from this world and this industry that is sport. But it applies to human performance in general. And, you know, when I wrote the book, The Performance Plan, that's kind of what it was all about. Where do you start? And once you do start, how do you keep it going? It's just a great, great world to be in for sure. And we're having a lot of fun. Today, we're going to continue that fun. And I wanted to get some hot topics that have come across the wire here in the last few weeks, because there's a lot of interesting things going on in the world of sport, of course. In the fall, it's one of my favorite times of year, not just because of the seasons. Look, I grew up in the north. There are four very distinct seasons. 1, 2, 3, and 4. They're very different. And you grow to become accustomed to that. And when I travel down to the southern hemisphere or over to Africa, you know, to help work on sport programs and develop athletes, it's really interesting to see the winters, the fall, the Christmas season with all the lights and palm trees and suntan lotion. Just really, really interesting. It's a beautiful place, this world we live in, and so many great things going on right now. Many of them brought to you by the industry of sport and sport performance. The fall, college football, NFL, Major League Baseball playoffs, tennis championships. We've got, of course, the NHL rumbling. The NBA is starting to rumble as well. Just so much going on in the world of sport. I love it. I absolutely love it. And there's a lot of cool things spinning out of it right now. And one of the things that caught my eye here recently was a conversation that I saw, an interview that I saw with the president of the International Olympic Committee, Thomas Bach. A great interview where they were just sort of recapping the summary leading up to 2020, but recapping what's been going on in the Olympic movement, some of the issues that they face, and some of the things they're trying to do to be progressive moving forward. We all know, listen, face it, the Olympics are in trouble. They're way too expensive. And a lot of the facilities that are being built for these games just aren't useful after the fact. I mean, we can look at the IOC, we can look at FIFA, the World Cup of soccer, for example. We do a lot of work with MLB and in the world of sport performance in Africa. And when I go down there and talk to the soccer people and the people in the communities and the sporting organizations, we look at those big, beautiful facilities that were built for the FIFA World Cup, of course, in Africa. Listen, they can't afford to turn the lights on. And as a matter of fact, when I was visiting Cape Town a few years ago, they said the only time the lights have been on since the World Cup was for a Lady Gaga concert. And that's just the realities of it all. And I really like to hear that the IOC is aware of all this, and they're trying to look at ways to make it more affordable and make it more user-friendly. The International Committee is embarking on a very ambitious strategic roadmap for the future. And they kind of have an agenda they've been working on leading up to 2020. Very, very important Olympics in 2020 as the Summer Olympics hit Japan. Baseball is back. There's going to be a lot of cool introductory sports. But this roadmap and this strategic plan included 40 recommendations that aim to make sure the games are clean and good in terms of governance and the application for host cities and all other measures that are to be applied to the Olympics. And for the most part, Mr. Bach says that we are on track and most of the reforms are being implemented right now. And of course, one of the big ones was the selection of host cities. And over the last little while, we've seen cities actually backing down or turning down opportunities to host simply because of the cost. Listen, there's way more important things to do right now in a lot of these areas than building huge, very, very expensive sporting venues that really don't connect with the average person out there. So how do you do it? What are some of the things the IOC can do to make this a little more user-friendly, make it a little more attractive for host cities? Because let's face it, the legacy of an Olympics in a community or in a country is very, very important. Sport is such an important part of society now, and it can be for sure, especially when times are troubling. You look at sport attendance and viewing of sport, it's really, really important in terms of even participation. And so we're going to follow that, and they want to make it more feasible and sustainable. And that's going to take some expertise, some tradecraft, so to speak, they're going to have to make some adjustments based on what they've done in the past. I just don't think the games can go on like this the way they have been. Should we start recycling old Olympic venues? I think that might be an option. Do all the Olympic sports have to happen at the same time in the same area? Can we not have Olympic tournaments spread out over the course of the 4-year period in smaller numbers rather than this big event? I'm not sure if that's feasible. Maybe that takes away from what the Olympics are all about, but all these things I'm sure are being discussed. But there's a lot of interesting things that are going on in terms of this roadmap as well. And one of the things that Mr. Bach mentioned in this interview was the need for the IOC to stay current. And that might mean, you know, maybe adding some sports and keeping the games relevant. And he talked about, you know, more young and urban sports in the games. And I think we're seeing that with some of the more X Games, Dew Tour type events that I think are really, really good for the Olympics. The ski cross, we're looking at the mountain biking, we're looking at some of these extreme sports, the BMXing, for example. A lot of great, exciting sports that might connect a little bit more with the younger generation, and that's exactly what we need. We still need the classic stable sports, just the historically traditional sports that we've seen in the Olympics. But I think we have to move forward. And that brings up the big question. And Mr. Bach was asked this question by the interviewer. Is esport a consideration for the Olympics? Well, the answer was incredibly interesting because they've been in contact with the esport leaders, the esport industry. Esport will generate over $1 billion a year right now. And there's over 250 million players online at any given time with all these games. And the competitions, well, you know it as well as I do. These competitions are getting huge. They have networks televising them that rival or shame a lot of the sport networks that are out there right now. And it's all online. My nephew is a gamer, and it's pretty cool. I'm not going to... I was a big gamer. Listen, I was a big gamer back in the day. Atari, Nintendo, Centipede. I was the asteroid champion of my area. But there wasn't a lot of Asteroid players, I'll tell you that. But man, I would play that game forever. I get the gaming community, and actually, I really, really enjoy it. But sitting down with my nephew, who's just now graduating from high school, this kid can play, and he's ranked. He's playing some of these big tournaments. And learning about the culture of esport, holy cow, man, this is incredible stuff. Is it worthy of the Olympics, however? I'm not sure. Some of the points that Mr. Bach brought up in that interview was their conversations with esport leaders and the fact that it's a very segmented sport. And then how do you get an industry like esports, which is a profit-driven industry, in line with a non-for-profit sort of value-driven organization like the IOC? And then you have the big question that I think we're all asking in the back of our minds, if not out loud in front of everybody. Is esport actually a sport? And is it something you can actually include in the Olympics? Is it more of a standalone type of thing where it has its own ebb and flow, its own following, its own games? Do you need to include esport in the Olympics? Very interesting conversation. And I think it's something we're going to have to keep our eye on. In 2022, the Asian Games, which are huge, they're big, very, very important games, sports. And all the Asian countries participate. In 2022, esport will be a medal sport in the Asian Games. Is that going to push the Olympics to start thinking about it? Could it be good for the Olympics? Well, listen, as much as they say they're a non-for-profit organization, they're generating billions of dollars. As a matter of fact, their goal, their revenue goal, for the period of 2017 to 2020 is to generate revenues of $6 billion. Now, most of that goes back into sport development, to pay wages, probably some pretty good wages from the sounds of it. But most of it goes back into sport development in the global scale. And $6 billion spread out over the world really isn't that much, ladies and gentlemen. You know, being in the baseball world, I saw the impact of baseball being pulled out of the Olympics, the financial impact. The federations from every baseball country no longer received funding from their local or their country's IOC, their country's Olympic committees. And that was a big, big blow to every single baseball organization on the planet. And that's something that spurred on Major League Baseball and the World Baseball Classic and some of the ways MLB has sort of kind of filled that gap. Trust me, Major League Baseball is so glad that baseball is back in the Olympics. What will that tournament look like? We're going to talk about that later this year because it's going to be great for the game. It's also going to be great, I think, for the Olympics. The question is going to be from Tokyo to Paris and then to Los Angeles. Is baseball going to be included in all of those? I think the big question would be Paris. And from the sounds of it, the World Baseball and Softball Confederation is working very, very closely with Major League Baseball and the IOC to make sure that baseball is there. So we'll see. But getting to maybe the main point that caught me in Mr. Bock's interview here on the IOC and moving forward in their strategic roadmap was a comment that he made when he was asked about doping. Where are we at with doping was sort of the question. And he said, for all intents and purposes, and this is a quote, his exact quote was, doping will always happen. And this is one of the wars you cannot win. These are the comments from the president of the International Olympic Committee, which kind of took me back. But I understand where he's coming from. It doesn't matter what the IOC or the World Anti-Doping Agency has done to this point, they're still doping. Look at the Russian athletic program, an entire state-run doping program that had an entire federation banned from international sport. How does that happen in this day and age? I think that just tells us what we're up against in terms of this fight against drugs in sports. It's a worthy battle. I am all for it, and I will push for it till the end of time. I do believe that there's no place for doping in competitive sports. There's just too many risk factors and too many variables. There's just too many bad things that can happen. And on the playing field of ethics and morals, it just can't stand. So what do you do? Well, I'm not so sure we're as far away as people might think. I mean, with the initiation in 2008, 2009, it was, you know, sort of secretly being worked on prior to that. But when they launched the biological passport system, which took samples of an athlete's blood, got a baseline of certain markers that scientists thought were really, really associated with maybe doping, but also with influencing performance outcomes, they would get a baseline, kind of like a passport. And that's what they called it, the biological passport. And instead of going in and testing for banned substances that they might miss or maybe that they can't test for yet, or like in the Balco example, a drug or a substance that they didn't even know existed, how can you test for something that you don't even know exists? You wouldn't miss that. In the biological passport, you don't look for a particular substance. You look for variations in blood markers that might indicate whether an athlete had been using something to improve performance. It makes so much sense. It was a little expensive when they first started it. The costs are coming down. It's getting more reasonable. Now you match that up with the urine testing, and now I think you've got something that's pretty bulletproof. As a matter of fact, very, very difficult to cheat with the blood passport system, even in the microdosing world that we're in right now. We all know that pro athletes are microdosing and they have the growth hormone thing down to short little microbursts over the course of the night. So if you were to get tested 48 hours later, you would test clean. I think we still have work to do, but I was surprised that the president of the IOC was making those strong remarks regarding doping. But that's the reality of it all. I mean, maybe that was a challenge to the World Anti-Doping Agency to see what they can do. And I think it's a worthy challenge. So I thought that was a really good interview for a number of reasons. And we'll post links to that interview on all of our social media platforms so you can have a look at it. But it's a worthy listen. I mean, if you're coaching in sport, if you have an athlete in sport, I mean, what the IOC does at the highest level impacts sport at every single level. And then, of course, something more recent just came out. Major League Baseball, of course, is one of the more progressive professional sports when it comes to doping and the way they've embraced it, kind of, you know, in the light of the public eye, of course. Would they have done it without the pressure of, you know, all the investigations and the doping scandals they've seen? I'm not sure. I'd like to think yes, but regardless, here we are. We have Major League Baseball sort of leading the way in professional sports. And right after this break, I want to get to a great partnership program they just initiated that I really think is going to help every single sport out there. Something to look at. We'll get into it right after this. And we're going to go back and have a look at the summer of 2018 Crush Performance style. Right after this, everybody on Crush Performance, stick around.
Do you love college football? Of course you do. And there's no better place for your college football conversation than right here on Rush the Field. I'm Scott Seidenberg, and alongside my co-host, veteran coach, scout, and consultant Chris Landry, we're going to break down the college game from all different aspects. Whether it's breaking news, big-time matchups, or just arguing about the rankings, Chris and I will have it all covered. So join us on Rush the Field with me, Scott Seidenberg, and Chris Landry. Available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at CrushPerformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Kreshel here. Get in touch with us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. Today, we are taking a look back at some of the hot stories that have come across the wire here recently. We also looked at a couple of episodes we're setting up for here in the next few weeks and this fall. We're doing a back-to-back special on coaching. We've asked the question, what are the top five things you'd like to know as a coach or learn as a coach right now to help you coach your athletes? Doesn't matter what sport. It doesn't matter what level. We've got some great lists here so far, and we'd like to get some more. So please do get to us. We are really looking forward to that show. We're going to talk to some of the world's experts on coaching and coaching development. And frankly, we're going to answer your questions. I mean, I have a few questions of my own. Coaching my daughter's U13, U14 now soccer team, but also from my work in the world of high-performance sport and strength and conditioning. There's a lot to consider if you are coaching kids, and it's so important to get that environment right, and it's not as hard as you think, as long as you know what to think about, I guess. So, again, get to us with those questions. So, we just finished a conversation looking at some of the hot stories coming off the wire here, and a conversation with Thomas Bach, the president of the IOC, really caught my eye here recently because the IOC does such great work in terms of promoting sport, and it really can unify nations in the world in a lot of good ways, but it can also be sort of a watchdog, so to speak, when you look at, for example, what happened with the Russian Athletic Federation being banned from international sport. Well, Mr. Bach had some interesting comments on doping, and we're really looking forward to following them as they work to execute their strategic roadmap for the future as we head into the Olympics in 2020. So again, you will find links to that interview on all of our social media platforms, on Twitter at Jeff Crush, on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can search Crush Performance, get hooked up there for sure. But one other story I wanted to get to before we go back and sort of look at the great summer of Crush Performance here is a great partnership that was just developed. And again, Major League Baseball is one of those really leading professional organizations. And whether it's because they're in the public eye and all the scandal they had in the early 2000s with the doping and how it broke open into the public eye, whatever caused it, thank goodness, because they're really doing some great work now. And this is a game changer. Coming out of the commissioner's office here this last week, Major League Baseball agrees to a groundbreaking partnership program with the trainers and agents in Latin America. Now, this is huge for a number of reasons. One, it's the Wild West down there. There's no regulatory, there's no certification. The agents can basically do what they want. And there are good and bad agents. Now, if you've followed this at all, you've probably heard of the horror stories. Sports Illustrated had a very powerful expose on this in 2009, 2010. ESPN has done stories on this as well, as have a number of other very reputable reporters. And it doesn't look good down there. I've been down there. I don't know the absolute inner workings of it all, but it is very, very unregulated. And Major League Baseball is working to improve player safety and the relationship with the trainers down there, agents that are developing young players. And it is an industry. It's one of the cruxes, I think, in the collective bargaining agreement. And one of the things that might be holding back the international draft, something that Major League Baseball would like, I think the owners would like as well, to control spending. But the agents down in Latin South America will not have anything to do with it. So this is a big step forward. Basically, they're partnering up with the trainers to certify and recognize training facilities that are reputable and will operate the right way. And it's sort of a two-way street. The trainers will get recognition They'll get more exposure to scouting. Their players will be seen a little bit more. They'll have more opportunities. And on the other side, Major League Baseball gets to conduct background checks on the trainers. The trainer has to keep records of their program, their employees, and the players, and provide that information to MLB upon request. And the trainers have to consent to having their players subject to random team-requested drug testing, including players who are young, maybe multiple years before they're eligible to sign with a pro team. That could be like 12, 13, 14 years of age. I'm not sure. They didn't really specify the ages. But if a team requests drug testing on a young player in that trainer's facility, the trainer has to comply or they lose their status with Major League Baseball. This is a groundbreaking deal. Huge for protecting those young athletes down there. If you go back and look at some of the reports that have come out of, you know, South America and some of these training facilities, man, we're talking horse steroids, veterinary steroids, their diet plan. It's basically a baseball mill type mentality. Now, don't get me wrong. I hate to generalize because there's some good people and good programs going on down there. This is just a huge step forward. And again, in exchange, the trainers who comply to all of these and get registered with Major League Baseball will receive enhanced scouting opportunities for their young players, which is great. It's great for the player. It's great for the trainer. It's great for baseball. They'll also receive access to supplements that are certified by MLB. And now that's the NSF certification, something that every single major sport has turned to as sort of the guideline for pure, safe supplements. And if you're using a supplement, or if you have a young athlete that's using a supplement, listen to me carefully. If it's not NSF sport certified, you better be careful, especially if you're trying to get a college scholarship, or if you're involved in a national team, or you're competing for a pro contract. About 25%, roughly 25% of the supplements on the market right now contain something that's not on the label that will cause a positive test. Proceed with caution. The supplement industry might be one of the scariest industries on the planet because it's so unregulated. So I'm loving this. Right now, of course, those supplements are readily available in North America, Canada, and the U.S., but very, very difficult to get outside the borders. So Major League Baseball is going to team up to help these organizations, these player development organizations, get their hands on these supplements. Love it. And MLB will use those trainers who are part of the program as sort of a sounding board, a collective as to how we should move forward in the best way possible. This is so great for the game. And I hope this resonates with other sports. I really think that's what's going to happen here, just bringing the game together. And could it lead to an international draft? I think it would be better for the players. I think it'd certainly be better for the organizations. And I think, you know, in terms of overall player development, I think we would actually see a higher level of baseball player coming into the game if there was a draft. Some of these kids sign young. They're not ready. Most of the teams are pretty good with how they manage these young players, but boy, oh boy, if we could steal a couple more years of development before we throw them into the fire, that would be fantastic. So we're watching this story with great interest, a brand new breaking story that I just think reeks of where sport is going these days, and it's really, really, really good. Okay, so congratulations to Major League Baseball. I think that's a big one. Speaking of things that were really good, we've had a great summer here on Crush Performance right from April to the end of August. And now as we head into fall, I just wanted to take a step back, and I was looking at the lineup of shows we had over the summer. I was going through the podcast and looking at the guests we've had on. As we set up our fall lineup, you know, we try not to be repetitious, but we also try to get an idea of what people are interested in and what they're asking about. And there were two shows that really stood out. One more recent, one from way back in April, that really stirred it up. And I'm quite proud of those shows for sure, because if we're not stirring it up, we're not doing our jobs, I always say. But these ones were great because there are two issues that I think, again, are really changing sport, and they really sort of show how we're evolving in terms of player and player development. Now, please listen carefully. This does not hold true to only sport. Anywhere there's human development, these two issues are very, very important. And the first one was a show that we did way back in April. April 21st was our show, I believe. And it was called To Ice or Not To Ice. And we had on athletic therapist Gary Reinel, who did a ton of research in his career on, hey, is ice the right thing to do? He just wanted answers. And when he started digging, well, he opened the rabbit hole, the Pandora's box, so to speak. And what he discovered and learned, I think, was the exact opposite of what he was expecting. Listen to this.
So I set out to become, in my view, my goal was to become the number one person in the world on how to use ice most productively. Okay, well, I get all done reading everything, talking to everybody, going through all the process, and I realize, uh-oh, there isn't a best way. It actually delays healing. It increases swelling. It causes additional damage, and it shuts off the signals that alert your harmful movement, and you need movement to solve the problem, and you need the signals to prevent you from doing movement that hurts you. So now I have a major problem. I now know that you shouldn't do it, and virtually all of my customers are doing it. And then I started to tell people what I knew.
It was a fantastic conversation with Gary. You can go back to the podcast and get that entire show. But at the end of the day, ice is not good. And doctors now are coming on board. And we've talked to athletic directors at the University of South Carolina in Aiken. They have, I think, what would be collegiate's first ice-free training room. So there is now a trend moving away from ice, which has just been a staple of sport. Injury management and recovery. So again, we're changing. And then one other show I want to get to quickly that had an impact and we had great feedback. Thanks everybody for writing in, was our recent show on sleep and with Dr. Charles Samuels from the Center for Sleep and Human Performance and his hard line on technology. Here we go.
I have a real hard line on this. You know, in my mind, if we're seeing anyone, but in particular an athlete, who is complaining of sleep disturbance that's affecting their performance in their sport, because that's important to them, we have to address the issue of technology. Most of them are using technology late in the day and don't understand. And I make the point to the parents that, you know, children now, parents of children who are 5 years old, these children won't actually know how to use a pencil. That's not a good thing.
Right.
And so it's so embedded in the psychology and culture that we're not balancing that out with the understanding of the negative impact of technology. So what we do, and again, it's something that's so hard for the kids to give up now, our clinical sleep educators really focus on all ways of mitigating the effect of light because they won't give up their technology, and we use light blocking glasses and screen blockers, etc. But the fact is, the other element of interacting with the device is very important because that's highly stimulating. And so in a kid that can't sleep, this is just not a good thing. So we talk a lot about, you know, really controlling screen time.
And there you go, Dr. Charles Samuels. We had such a great response to that show that I just wanted to replay that for the parents, teachers, and coaches out there. There's your ammo. Play that interview to your team before you even start your season. And hopefully we can put a dent in the technology and the impact it's having on, you know, decreased sport performance, increased risk of injuries, and, you know, flat out lower performance everywhere we are. So good discussion there. I want to thank all the guests we had over the summer. I want to thank you all for tuning in. We are working diligently on our fall lineup, and it's coming together very, very nicely. Coming up next week, as a matter of fact, we'll be talking talent development, and we're also going to look at what to watch in the NFL. There's a lot to talk about here in the contact sports in terms of head injuries, rule changes in sport, and things that parents of the contact sports need to be looking out for and thinking about, frankly. There are strategies and great changes going on in sport right now to improve player safety. That's going to be one of the hot topics coming up next week. So until then, everybody, go out, get better, and we'll talk to you next time on Crush Performance.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to ride.
This is an Ian Beckles Flavor in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
Politics is getting to the point where it's becoming so amusing, it's becoming entertaining, it's becoming disgusting, and it's a lot of things, and it turns my stomach, that is for sure, but this is going to be the death of us as a society. It's going to be politics, either politics or religion, and they're all the same damn thing. It's the same damn thing, okay? Tiger Woods came out the other day and pretty much didn't speak against Donald Trump. He didn't shine like Donald's the greatest guy. He just said, you know, I got no problem with Donald Trump, blah, blah, blah. I got no problem with Tiger Woods not having a problem with Donald Trump. I really don't. But people like to abuse people for nothing. It's his opinion. It's his life. He can do as he pleases. Everybody wants to get in somebody else's Cheerios all the time. And you can't give an opinion anymore without the other side going absolutely batshit crazy. It's automatic now. And, you know, when I'm looking at people, the way they're reacting to others speak, and I'm like, man, we're all freaking losing it. Who gives a shit? Who cares who Tiger Woods likes or doesn't like? Tiger Woods is wealthy. He's not rich. He's wealthy. You know what? If I was wealthy, you know who I would like to? Donald Trump. Wealthy people are not going to dislike Donald Trump. That's not going to happen. Because in their world, he's definitely beneficial, that's for sure.
You can find Ian Beckles' Flavor in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.